Priya, what's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. After decades of estrangement, Cuba opens its embassy in Washington. The Cuban flag was hoisted outside the country's newly established embassy in Washington Monday, ending a decades-long diplomatic rupture caused by the Cuban Revolution, led by Fidel Castro. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry met with his Cuban counterpart, Bruno Rodriguez, at the State Department.
Nothing is more futile than trying to live in the past. President Obama believes, and so do I, that our citizens benefit far more from policies that aim to shape a better future. There is, after all, nothing to be lost and much to be gained by encouraging travel between our nations, the free flow of information and ideas, the resumption of commerce, and the removal of obstacles that have made it harder for families to visit their loved ones.
Mr. Kerry said the full normalization process will be long and complex. The Cuban foreign minister demanded an end to the U.S. trade embargo and return to the U.S. military base at Guantanamo Bay. President Obama Monday met at the White House with Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari to discuss the threat posed by Boko Haram militants, among other issues, including corruption.
On both these issues, we're looking forward to hearing more about his plans and how the United States can partner with Nigeria so that Nigeria ends up being an anchor not only of prosperity and stability, but can also be an outstanding role model for developing countries around the world.
The four-day trip is Mr. Buhari's first to Washington since taking office in May in a rare peaceful transition of power in Nigeria. This is VOA News. In Nigeria Monday, at least three policemen killed by a suicide car bombing at a checkpoint on the outskirts of Damaturu, capital of Yobe State. The Associated Press reports more than 20 people, including children, were killed by dozens of suspected Boko Haram militants in Kamuna in northern Cameroon. The UN Security Council has voted unanimously to approve the Iran nuclear agreement, expected to clear the way for a lifting of crippling sanctions. The council directed the International Atomic Energy Agency to verify and monitor Iran's compliance. U.S. UN Ambassador Samantha Power said the agreement gives Tehran a chance to prove it intends to pursue a peaceful nuclear program.
This deal gives Iran an opportunity to prove to the world that it intends to pursue a nuclear program solely for peaceful purposes. If Iran seizes that opportunity, if it abides by the commitments that it agreed to in this deal, if it builds upon the mutual respect and diligence that its negotiators demonstrated in Lausanne and Vienna, and if it demonstrates a willingness to respect the international standards upon which our collective security rests, then it will find the international community and the United States willing to provide a path out of isolation and toward greater engagement.
She cautioned the deal does not diminish continuing U.S. concern about Iran, including human rights violations and its support for terrorism, as well as its ballistic missile programs. A suicide bombing in Turkey's southeastern city of Suric Monday killed at least 31 and left dozens more wounded. Turkey suspects it was the work of the Islamic State militants. European Union interior ministers failed Monday to find temporary homes on the continent for tens of thousands of African, Asian, and Middle Eastern asylum seekers in Greece and Italy after perilous journeys across the Mediterranean. Dimitris Avramopoulos is the EU commissioner for migration.
It is clear member states must deliver on the promises made at the European Council last month to reach the agreed figure of 40,000 persons proposed by the Commission. I want to be frank with you. I'm disappointed that this did not happen today.
Nearly 140,000 have fled war, persecution, and poverty in the first 6 months of this year. Burundi's opposition has called for a boycott of Tuesday's presidential election, which is going ahead despite months of violent anti-government protests over President Pierre Nkurunziza's quest for a controversial third term. Members of the opposition say the country's political crisis, including widespread intimidation and threat of violence, does not allow for free, fair, and peaceful elections. Critics demanded Mr. Nkurunziza step aside after serving the two constitutionally allowed terms. The trial of former Chadian dictator Issa Nabre got underway in Senegal Monday. The 72-year-old charged with the deaths of thousands of Chadians during his 8-year rule ending in 1990. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, July 21st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. President Barack Obama met Monday with Nigeria's president and promised U.S. support in the fight against Boko Haram.
President Buhari comes into office with a reputation for integrity and a very clear agenda, and that is to make sure that he is bringing safety and security and peace to his country.
Residents of President Obama's ancestral home in Kenya prepare for his visit later this month. The trial of former Chadian President Issen Habre began yesterday in Senegal's capital, and gunfire and grenade explosions in Burundi's capital Monday night as the country votes today in controversial presidential election.
In the capital city, the people don't care about this presidential election, and as it was with the parliament and the communal elections, because there are elections with no competition at all. Only the president is running with some small other candidates.
Innocent Muhozi is the general manager of the banned Independent Renaissance Radio and Television Network of Burundi. Zimbabwe's Supreme Court rules on workers' termination, and we'll tell you how mosquitoes know and when and who to bite. Those stories plus Mark Olman's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. President Barack Obama is offering U.S. support to Nigeria's new leader in his fight against Boko Haram, as well as efforts to put Nigeria on a more democratic path. VOA correspondent Aru Pandey has more on Mr. Obama's talks with President Muhammadu Buhari on Monday at the White House.
Just 8 weeks after taking office, Nigerian President Buhari sat beside President Obama in the Oval Office and listened as the American leader praised the historic vote, marking the first democratic transfer of power since the end of military rule in Nigeria in 1999.
We saw an election in which a peaceful transition to a new government took place, and it was an affirmation of Nigeria's commitment to democracy.
During Monday's visit to the White House, President Buhari, dressed in traditional attire and speaking softly, thanked President Obama for U.S. support in making the hope of a peaceful transition a reality.
The maintenance of pressure by United States, mainly, and Europe, to make sure that the elections were free, fair, and credible, led us to where we are now.
The former dictator took power in March after defeating then-President Goodluck Jonathan. Under Mr. Jonathan's administration, U.S. relations with Nigeria plummeted, with officials raising concerns about the government's ability to fight Boko Haram, particularly after last year's kidnapping of some 200 Nigerian schoolgirls. Bronwyn Bruton is the deputy director of the Atlantic Council's Africa Center.
With the Goodluck Jonathan administration, I think that for many, many years, the Boko Haram threat was allowed to fester and has actually been made considerably worse by the fact that the Nigerian military has been so brutal.
Mr. Buhari, a retired general, came to power promising change and within days replaced the heads of Nigeria's Army, Navy, and Air Force. In an op-ed published Monday in the Washington Post, the Nigerian leader pledged to take the fight directly to Boko Haram while, quote, instilling good governance and tackling the scourge of corruption.
President Buhari comes into office with a reputation for integrity and a very clear agenda, and that is to make sure that he is bringing safety and security and peace to his country.
President Obama said Mr. Buhari has a, quote, very clear agenda to fight both Boko Haram and corruption, and pledged U.S. cooperation on both fronts. During Monday's briefing, White House spokesman Josh Earnest said the leaders discussed Boko Haram and noted the U.S. commitment to working with Nigeria to help counter disruptive terrorist activities. But Earnest said such cooperation includes the requirement the Nigerian government improve its human rights record. Improving human rights, ushering in democratic reforms, and boosting Nigeria's economy are all likely to be further discussed as President Buhari continues his four-day Washington visit that includes meetings with members of Congress, the Cabinet, and the World Bank. Aru Pandey, VOA News at the White House.
Burundians are voting today in presidential election where President Pierre Nkurunziza is seeking a controversial third term. Most, if not all, of the major opposition groups are boycotting today's vote because they say Mr. Nkurunziza's third term bid violates the constitution. But the president's supporters say his first election was by parliament and not by the people. Meanwhile, the capital, Bujumbura, was rocked by gunfire and grenade explosions on Monday night. It was not immediately clear who was behind the shooting, but Innocent Muhozi, general manager of the band Independent Renaissance Radio and Television Network of Burundi, says the shooting could not have been done by the army or the police, but probably those who are against the election.
Yes, the country is preparing for elections today. Even if this night there were shootings and grenades in the capital city, Bujumbura, I don't know yet the situation in the countryside, but today is the day where there are going to be this presidential election, this so controversial presidential election.
You said there was shooting overnight. Do you know who was responsible for the shooting?
I don't know. I cannot tell at all. I don't know. Maybe I could say that it should not be the police, should not be the army, because they have no interest in doing that. Maybe from the guys who are trying to show their protest by saying that this should not be.
Was there any curfew overnight?
Not at all. No curfew at all.
You're in the capital city, Bujumbura. What is the situation now in terms of whether the people there are ready to vote?
You know, in the capital city, in the main cities, people don't care about this presidential election, and as it was with the parliamentary and the communal elections, because there are elections with no competition at all. Only the ruling party is running, only the president is running with some small other candidates. Nobody takes them as serious challenges for the president. So mainly in Bujumbura, most of the people don't care about these elections because there's been so much violence, so much controversy about it. They fear that after this, things are going to be worse.
You mentioned that only the ruling party is taking part. Over the weekend, at least three opposition parties pulled out. But whenever we spoke to the ruling party, they said that there were other parties that were ready to participate in this election.
Yes, there are small wings of some parties that are ready to participate, but those small wings are the allies of the ruling party. Nobody takes them as serious challenges for the ruling party. As it's been shown by the communists and the parliamentary elections, those parties almost get nothing. So they are the ones who are supposed to be competing with the president.
There were some discussions or the mediation process taking place by the Ugandan president, Museveni. What happens now?
Nothing is going on. You know, those negotiations will continue even after this election. The same problem that were on the table is still there because it was about this third term of the president. It was about the electoral calendar and the whole international community, the regional community, the African Union, the European Union, all asked Burundi to have a consensual process, but it was a kind of electoral process. That's why I think the problems that were on the table stay there even after this election. People will have to come back to the table to negotiate again, to see how to live together, how to find some consensus on the on vital questions like violence, like justice, like the government and many other things, because we are almost now in another war.
Innocent Muhozi is the general manager of the band Independent Renaissance Radio and Television Network of Burundi. He was speaking with me from the capital, Bujumbura. The trial of former Chadian president Issen Habre got underway on Monday. Once dubbed Africa's Pinochet, Habre is facing trial for alleged human rights abuses, including 40,000 deaths during his 8-year rule. Mariama Diallo reports from Dakar, Senegal.
L'audience de la Chambre africaine extraordinaire d'assises de la Cour d'appel de Dakar.
The long-awaited trial of former Chadian leader Hissène Habré opened in the Senegalese capital, Dakar. Habré is standing trial on charges of crimes against humanity, torture, and war crimes during his 8-year rule. Before proceedings started, Habré, dressed in white with a turban, sat quietly until some of his supporters erupted with shouts in French saying, "Long live Chad and long live President Habré." One of the victims present, Fatine Toumlé, said the trial is historic.
C'est un très, très grand jour. un jour J, un jour tant attendu.
She said the start of the trial is a day of joy and satisfaction. She said everyone should be against impunity. Clément Abeifuta recalled being arrested and put in prison in 1985. He's the president of the Association of the Victims of Crimes during the Abré regime.
Oui, mais lorsque vous mettez quelqu'un dans des conditions assez inhumaines.
He said he and others were put in inhuman conditions and given food that most would not give to dogs. He said he helped bury as many as 8 or more fellow prisoners a day. U.S. Ambassador at Large Stephen Rapp from the State Department Office of Global Justice says leaders should know they cannot get away with crimes committed under their watch.
At the end of the day, there will be justice, and one can be frustrated by the long delay. But the signal that's sent to a leader that may decide in order to retain power to kill people, to kill the innocent, to torture, to commit other crimes against humanity is that they may think they're getting away with it today, but the day of justice will arrive.
One of Abré's lawyers, François Serre, says his client was forced to appear in court and his team is boycotting the trial.
Because we consider that this procedure in this court is an illegitimate court. We consider the principle that there is not a due process when the investigation have not been conducted fairly.
Judges found sufficient evidence for Abré to be charged after a 19-month investigation. Senegalese League for the Defense of Human Rights President Hassan Diomaye Ndiaye says the trial must be transparent.
Je pense que le monde a les yeux rivés aujourd'hui sur le Sénégal. L'Afrique doit.
He says the world has its eyes in Senegal and the whole Africa has to legitimize the fact that they can judge their own citizens. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, in Dakar.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, July 21st, and please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time, 17 minutes past the hour. U.S. President Barack Obama will visit Kenya this month, the country of his father's birth, for the first time since becoming president. Mohamed Yusuf traveled to the Obama family's ancestral homeland, a small village in western Kenya, to see how the residents have benefited from their association with the U.S. president.
Kogelo is a remote rural village in western Kenya and the birthplace of U.S. President Barack Obama's father. Once a sleepy village, today it has electricity, paved roads and schools. This village came into the limelight 10 years ago when Mr. Obama became a U.S. senator. Since then, it has grown, and many parents have enrolled their children in school. Part of this school sits on Obama family ancestral land. Here, there's a strong sense of hope among the children, according to the Senator Barack Obama primary school's head teacher, Manessa Oyucho. He says students believe that given a chance, they can achieve something.
The children are interested in learning up to university and becoming leaders. And they believe they will become leaders in various areas. The children are convinced that education is power.
In this school alone, for the last decade, the number of children has doubled. Wesley Onyango Obama says the development sparked by the Obama name, such as roads, has opened the village up to the rest of the region.
If I have anything to sell now, I either take it to Kisumu, Ndori, or the Wanda Kitianyo. I can take it with ease, but before, it was a nightmare.
And carpenter George Ogola says the village is now seeing more visitors from all over the world.
There is an increase in the number of people visiting here because this is where the president is from. This is one of the things that make people from here happy, and everything that happens here, people like it.
When President Obama comes to Kenya, people in this village say they hope he will find time to visit Kogelo. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Kogelo, Western Kenya.
The Confederation of Zimbabwe Industries and the Employers' Confederation of Zimbabwe have welcomed a Supreme Court ruling that companies can terminate workers' contracts without offering termination benefits, but must only give them 3 months' notice. The Labour Ministry and the Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions say the ruling may lead to large-scale retrenchment of workers. Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions President George Nkiwane and self-confessed libertarian economist Rejoice Ngwenya share their views on the Supreme Court's ruling.
I do understand that the workers' rights are clearly and adequately protected in the Constitution, also covered by human rights. But unfortunately, you know, when it comes to contractual law, sometimes what the contract says is what an employer also implements. And I believe really, you know, the court has been pragmatic in looking at the fact that the degree of freedom of association that an employee enjoys as an individual must be the same one afforded a company, which is also considered a legal persona. I believe really that perhaps the law was looking at the facts as they appear in the Constitution.
Mr. Nkiwane, your response?
I need to be very clear on this one. This is the worst judgment ever that we have ever had in this country. Number one, morally and ethically, it is very, very wrong. Whether the judge has interpreted the law correctly as it ought to be. But we need to look at the repercussions and after effects of that judgment. So whether the law was interpreted correctly, but what we need to look at is the intention of the legislator when they enacted the Labor Act that we are currently using. And if you look at the judgment itself, the judge is referred to common law. And I wonder how they did that, because I'm not a legal persona, but I do understand that the tenets of common law in the majority of cases that trying to resuscitate a law that has been abandoned maybe 13, 20 years ago here in Zimbabwe.
Mr. Ngwenya, are you of the same opinion that this is the worst judgment ever?
Well, look, I mean, that's me obviously asking the wrong person. I'm not a socialist, I'm a liberal. And really, the way that we liberals understand the balancing of capital, you really have to offer equal, you know, depth and magnitude to capital, whether it's money or human capital or machinery. The thing really is that the interest of the business also have to be taken into account. When a law is inflexible, I mean, there's been so much talk about flight of capital in Zimbabwe and the reluctance of the international investment community come to Zimbabwe.
That was Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions President George Nkiwane and self-confessed libertarian economist Rejoice Ngwenya. They spoke with Blessing Zulu of VOA's Zimbabwe service. Dengue, yellow fever, and malaria. Over 1 million people worldwide died from these mosquito-borne diseases each year, despite efforts to keep the insects from biting. Now, new research shows how mosquitoes are so efficient at targeting their hosts, information that may one day help stop them. Maya Pujara reports.
The mosquito's quest for a meal of blood begins when carbon dioxide gas, which all mammals exhale, alerts it that a warm-blooded creature is nearby. As it gets closer to a potential host, it can tell a human from a dog or a rock because of the special combination of warmth and odors coming off our skin. What Michael Dickinson at the California Institute of Technology wanted to know was how these tiny insects, with brains no bigger than a grain of sand, could go from not sensing their host at all to getting up close and personal, ready to feed.
We suspected from research that we had been doing on fruit flies that vision might play a very large and underappreciated role in allowing the mosquito to really home in on the potential host target.
Dickinson's team piped plumes of carbon dioxide gas into a wind tunnel and used cameras to track a mosquito's flight path as it followed that plume. They also projected images of dark objects on the floor and walls of the tunnel to see how the mosquitoes would respond to something that would look like a potential host to them from far away.
What was quite striking and quite surprising is that the mosquitoes fly back and forth for hours. These are hungry females, and they completely ignore the objects on the floor and wall of the tunnel. But the moment they get a hit of CO2, they change their behavior quite dramatically and now would become attracted to these little visual blobs.
This told Dickinson and his team that once mosquitoes catch a whiff of a potential meal, they start looking for where it came from.
This really makes a lot of sense, because if the mosquitoes were distracted by every visual object in their world, they would just waste all their time. In this case, they only start paying attention when their nose tells them that there might be a host nearby.
This process happens several times over the course of a mosquito's flight. The study, published in Current Biology, details the steps of the mosquito's flight so that we may one day have a fighting chance against the biting insect. Maya Pajara, VOA News, Washington.
Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Tuesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with football. Kenya's Gor Mahia beat Zanzibar's KMKM 3-1. As Sudan's Khartoum National outclassed Djibouti's Telkom 5-0. At the Council of East and Central Africa Football Association's SEKAFA Kagame Club Championships in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania on Monday. In Switzerland, a new FIFA president will be elected on the 26th of February next year. The FIFA Executive Committee disclosed in Zurich on Monday. The election is to replace FIFA president Sepp Blatter, who steps down amid an unprecedented barrage of scandal and corruption allegations that has tarnished FIFA's image. Turning to athletics, Kenya's Vincent Kipyegon Ruto led Ethiopian Wogen Sebisibe and Kenyan Geoffrey Rotich in an African 1-2-3 medal podium sweep in boys' 2,000-meter steeplechase at the IAAF World Youth Championships in Cali, Colombia on Sunday. Richard Yato Kimunyen and David Kiplangat secured a 1-2 Kenyan win in 3,000 meters as Ethiopian Tefera Mosisa placed third. South African Paul Jacobus Botha won boys' javelin. South Africa bagged silver medal in boys' and girls' 200 meters through Kyle Apple and Nicole Debrain, respectively, and the mixed 4x400-meter relay. Ayel Nesh Dejen of Ethiopia clinched a bronze medal in girls' 5,000-meters race walk. At the end of the championship, Kenya is second with 5 gold, 4 silver, and 4 bronze medals. Ethiopia is fifth, South Africa is sixth among 36 countries on the medal table. In basketball, Belgium outplayed Mali 60-41 and Spain beat Egypt 87-64 at Women's World Under-19 Basketball Championships in Chekhov, Russia on Sunday. On Saturday, Canada beat Mali 71-62 as China dismissed Egypt 73-60. Today, Tuesday, Mali play France and Egypt face the United States of America. In Madagascar, Mali beat Nigeria 57-46 to win the Africa Women's Under-16 Basketball Championships in Antananarivo on Sunday. Angola edged Mozambique 52-48 in the bronze medal playoff. Madagascar beat Tunisia 64-57 in the fifth place playoff, and Egypt outplayed Morocco 61-46 in the seventh place playoff. In cricket, Namibia play Netherlands in the quarterfinals at the ICC 2020 World Cup qualifiers today, Tuesday. Finally, Kenya beat Spain 37-26 in a rugby test match in Nairobi on Sunday. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. U.S. President Barack Obama has met with Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari at the White House to discuss the threat posed by Boko Haram militants and other issues. Mr. Obama called Nigeria one of the most important countries in the world and said its recent election and peaceful transition to a new government is an affirmation of Nigeria's commitment to democracy. He added he is very concerned by Boko Haram attacks and he believes President Buhari has a clear agenda about defeating the group and rooting out corruption that has held Nigeria's economic prosperity backward. Explosions and gunfire could be heard in Burundi's capital, Bujumbura, on Monday night on the eve of a divisive presidential election. The attacks come against the backdrop of simmering tensions over incumbent President Pierre Nkurunziza's quest for a third consecutive five-year term. And a special court in Senegal began a long-awaited trial Monday against former Chadian ruler Hissène Habré on charges of torture, war crimes, and crimes against humanity. That is it for this Tuesday, July 21st edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Tracy Carter, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Mark Ouma, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Barton in Washington saying, have a nice day, Africa.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga. Please join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 1700 hours UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas and enlighten us all on the topic at hand. So please plan to be with us every Thursday at 1700 hours UTC on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America.
The best music comes from Africa. An African beat gives you the best of the best, from Benga to Juju, Hip Life to Bunga Flavor, Afrobeat to Ndombolo and Makossa to Kwaito. All happening right here on the African beat of the Voice of America, Monday through Friday, 0900 and 2000 Universal Time, with me, your host, David Vandy.